It's Bill Nash here from lake-atitlan.net. I'm here in San Juan La Laguna on the shores of Lake Atitlan, Guatemala, and I'm speaking with the owner, founder, and visionary behind Eco Hotel Mayachik here in San Juan. And maybe we could start off with a little bit of your background, Evelyn. How did you come to Guatemala from... Was it Austria?
Yes, Austria. Yeah. Basically, my background is starting like when I was really young. When I was a very young girl, I kind of like heard that other people have relatives in other countries. And I realized that all my relatives are within 5 kilometers. And so I thought like, okay, good. I cannot change that. But for the next generation, I'm going to change that. So... my nephews, my nieces will have an aunt in another country. That was my decision that I made when I was a very small girl, actually. And so I was always like having my vision like that. Like I always knew I want to go to another country. I want to live in another country. So I was really like taking all the steps to move somewhere else. And Guatemala in particular was like one of the countries that when I was a kid, I heard about Guatemala, but it was one of these countries that's like very, very poor country. And we are collecting money to help the people in Guatemala. That was like one of the things that I learned when I was a kid. And then when I was traveling, people told me, hey, Guatemala is a good country to learn Spanish. So I was like, okay, cool. So I'm gonna visit Guatemala on my trip. I was on a trip around the world for 1 year, taking basically a year off after studying before really starting to work. And so I first came to Guatemala, and I loved Guatemala. I loved Guatemala immediately, as you can see. I mean, like, Guatemala is an amazing country. Everybody loves it who comes here. And yeah, but my first time in Guatemala, I was not sure. I mean, I was sure, I knew more or less what I wanted to do, I was not ready for that yet. I knew like, okay, I'm still traveling. Because mm-hmm. like at the beginning of this trip that I did around the world for 1 year, I was visiting a lot of nice places, a lot of countries, a lot of places that I loved. And about halfway in, I came to Australia. And in Australia, I had some time. I was like, okay, good. I have some time. I can spend more time in one place. But I just didn't want to just stay. So I was asking if I can volunteer in a hostel where I was staying. And they told me like, yeah, sure. You can choose receptionist if you commit for 6 weeks or cleaning if you commit for 2 weeks. And I was like, receptionist. That's me. It was the first job that I ever had in a hostel. My first job was receptionist, and I loved it. I loved it so much. So I was like, okay, I really love doing it. I love working reception. I love dealing with guests. I love to arrange tours for them and do all these things. I love doing that. It was a really amazing job for me, mm-hmm. a really great experience. And it also fostered in me the belief that I can do that myself. Because like this, the owner of the hostel was not really working much there. It was mostly volunteers there. So I thought like, okay, if this guy can do it, I can do it. I can build my own hostel and I can have it run with volunteers. Mm-hmm. That was like my plan. Because if somebody can do it, I can do it. And so I gave myself a time frame of 10 years to find the perfect place to build my hostel. Because I didn't want to do like straight away. I was like really more planning like I know what I want. I just don't want to make it like rushing. I want to explore the world and really see that. So gave myself 10 years and I knew like in those 10 years, I'm going to find a place. And in those 10 years, I'm going to work. I'm going to earn money so I can actually invest and build something. That was like my plan. And like a few months after I made that decision, I came to Guatemala for the first time and just loved it. It was like amazing. And so Guatemala was always one of the countries where I always wanted to go back and like was considering from the beginning on. And then I went back to Austria after the world trip, started to work, But I was also working in international career. For me, it was always like, I have to move in another country. I have to have international jobs. So it was like, for me, like the way to do it. So from the beginning, I knew I'm not going to end up in Austria. I knew I'm going to end up somewhere else. And after a few years working in a job, I told my boss, like, I need some extended holiday. And I'm going to go somewhere where I can learn Spanish. Because before that, I was always like learning and forgetting Spanish. So the first time I was in Guatemala, I was in a Spanish class actually for 1 week. And I left it. It was in Antigua back then. But then, because I was not practicing it, I forgot it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of like sick of like learning, forgetting. And so in 2010, I decided like, okay, I'm going to take a longer vacation. I wish that is my company to give me 5 months off to go travel to Guatemala. That was like the place that I have chosen to really learn Spanish. Because the first time was a good experience. So I was like, why not? Why not again Guatemala? And during that time, I went to other places that I haven't been before. And I also came the first time to San Juan. I was in San Pedro before. And also my second trip, I was in San Pedro first. And then I had a Spanish teacher in San Pedro who was from San Juan. And he was telling me all these cool things about the culture in San Juan. And so I was like really intrigued. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to come. I want to come and see San Juan. And it happened to be exactly these days of the year during the feria.
Mm-hmm.
So I came and saw like the beautiful presentations, the cultural presentations of the different schools and the parade and everything. And it was just a really, really good experience to get started with that. And back then I was one of the first foreigners. There were hardly any foreigners here. I was like one of the first. So everybody was, of course, like even more welcoming than nowadays. Because there were not many people who were coming to visit their village. And I told them about my idea. I told them about my idea that I want to build a hostel. And I wanted to do it ecologically. That was like one of the premises for me from the beginning. Because that's maybe because of my Austrian background that I always felt like sustainability, ecological living is something important.
Mm-hmm.
So I always wanted to do it like this. And also because like my experience from traveling before and also from traveling in Guatemala before was that there's not really enough water. And so why waste the water with a toilet drainage, for example? Makes no sense. And a lot of things like this, that I was like, okay, no, I want to build a sustainable business. I want to build a ecological business. And so I was sharing my ideas with the people and they all like were super welcoming. Tell me like, yeah, do that. So I was like, okay, maybe that's the place. And so I was like basically making a decision to do it in San Juan, to start my business in San Juan. I was also like looking at other countries and evaluating a lot of other places. But in San Juan, the difference was really that I just felt completely welcomed by the people. I just felt like with these people here, I can live. Because
mm-hmm.
with most other places, it was like, oh yeah, beautiful beach, amazing place. But can I live with those people? Or can I just be there for holidays? That was really one of the criteria for me to distinguish like where to build.
Right.
And so, yeah, San Juan basically invited me in to do my business. They all encouraged me, the people that I met.
And you found this incredible site here.
Yeah.
It's just like it's like on the side of a mountain. And just the way that you have it set up here, it's very, very Guatemalan. But you also have maybe you could explain eco-friendly, sustainable mm-hmm. hospitality for yeah. people.
Yeah. So for me, hospitality can be good for the planet and still be like comfortable, still have like all the comforts that you need in modern life. Because like a lot of people, they think like ecological there's no toilets, there's no hot water, there's no internet. But that's not true. Sure, if you live in a jungle, somewhere remote, you might not have that. But if you live close to a village, you can have all the amenities of modern life, but you can still do it in a way that is not harming the planet. So we have a couple of practices implemented here to really like lower our footprint as much as possible without compromising the quality basically of the stay for the people. But yeah, it all comes down basically to you can have luxury, you can have comfort, and you can at the same time be kind to the planet. That's basically the bottom line of it, sustainable.
And as tourism. Far as specific things, we're in the rainy season here. Yeah. So I imagine you have water catchments.
Yeah, we do. We do. We have water catchment systems. And in the rainy season, we are completely sustainable with that. We don't need extra water from the village sources. And we're currently building as well a bigger water cistern, so we can also keep that going on through the dry months. So the idea is to really be sustainable enough to not depend on the village water, because it's a limited resource and we don't want to take from a limited resource. We rather use the lush rains to use our water needs. Okay. Our water needs.
Well, maybe we could go through some of the other things that you're eco-friendly here.
Sure. Another thing, our compost toilets. Our compost toilets are not producing black water. They're not wasting water. They're built in a way that everything that you leave there basically can be reused. So instead of a flush toilet, we put sawdust on top of the excrements that you leave in the toilet. And we also and this one is then reused with the coffee plants after like 6 months
the
of
coffee
decompose.
Plants.
Yeah, decompose. Oh. So like we let that mix of like excrements and toilet paper and sawdust, we let that decompose for 6 months, and then we use it as fertilizer for the coffee plants. It's like one of the ways that we reuse that. And we separate the urine from the feces in the toilet, and the urine together with the water from
diluted.
It's diluted with the water from the sink, for example, but also together with the water from our restaurant sink, basically. That one goes directly to our banana circles. So our bananas are one of the best reusers of quay water. They love quay water. And as you can see, they are really, really big.
Yes, so they are.
They're growing bigger than in other places.
And you also have, my goodness, avocado trees and all these different types of fruits and things. Were these here before?
All the big trees were here before. All the big trees. There were a lot more coffee plants in the beginning. So when I first bought this piece of land, which is comprised of many different pieces actually, it was like avocado trees and coffee plants and a few of the other bigger trees. They were here before. And yeah, we had to cut a few of the coffee plants to start building. But the majority of the trees we left exactly how they were, and yeah, there's still a lot of big avocado trees.
And speaking of buildings, maybe we could just go around. You could describe some of these structures here because they're pretty amazing. Well, why don't we start where people usually check in, the restaurant area here?
Yeah, so the restaurant building is basically a mixture of different construction styles. So that was the last one of the main buildings that we built. And so we started originally like with using Adobe as our main material. Adobe bricks, basically bricks made out of clay, and clay and some tree needles, basically tree leaves. It's a mix of that, and that one is the main material how houses used to be done in Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started to use wood for the construction of other bungalows, and we also used bahareque, which is a system of adobe, basically, but not making adobe bricks, mixing little stalks from, in this case, from the coffee plants that we had to cut, mixed with soil and clay.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's like one of the walls that we have in my post in the dorm, but also in the Western. So the Western wood is a combination of all the different styles that we have here, the building styles, like the adobe bricks, the bahareque, the wood, and also
and the
bamboo,
the
and
thatching
straw.
Of,
yeah,
of these roofs here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What type of material is this?
This is palm leaves.
Palm leaves.
Palm leaves. Yeah, that one comes from the coast.
Mm-hmm.
So that material is also from Guatemala. Like all the materials are Guatemalan materials.
Mm-hmm.
That one comes the furthest because it's from the coast, so it's a few hours from here, because we don't have like the palms here. But yeah,
they're very waterproof.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
What about some of the other buildings here? Okay, well, we talked about the building. Now you've got a restaurant.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Vegetariano restaurant.
Yeah. So for me, it was very important that the restaurant is vegetarian for two reasons. Number one, I'm vegetarian. I became vegetarian when I was traveling. And number two, because it's just kinder to the planet, because it takes a lot less resources from the earth to produce vegetables instead of producing meat. And so for me, it was a logical thing to do the restaurant completely vegetarian. And in the beginning, there was a lot of resistance. In the beginning, a lot of people told me like, no, you cannot do just vegetarian. People need meat. They need chicken. But I was like, no, we can do it vegetarian. And the funny thing is like, in the beginning, like also the people that worked here as cooks, they were like, oh, no, you cannot sell non-meat. You cannot sell anything like this. And they all had experience in their homes to prepare meat. But a lot of them, after a while, they were like, I don't even want to work anymore where they have meat. I'm happy that it's vegetarian, and we're never going to change that. So it's really a process. And nowadays, it's normal to have vegetarian restaurants. In the beginning, it was something completely exotic, and mm-hmm. especially people here was like, were not really buying into the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have like, not a lot of clients with the local people when it comes to the restaurant. But yeah, there are some dishes that they also love, like the pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So vegetarian pizza is not a big deal.
And I can attest to a very delicious mushroom pépien.
Yeah, that's very good. I mean, for me, it was always very important to really like use local food and make a vegetarian version out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have vegetarian versions, vegan versions actually, of the pepian, of paches, tamales, tostadas, rellenitos, tacos.
Bean burgers.
Bean burger, yeah.
Burrito.
These are not really Guatemalan typical ones. But yeah, we have a lot of really nice international dishes as well,
mm-hmm.
like the bean burger, for example. But I don't consider them Guatemalan dishes. But no. We have a variety of like international dishes, like pancakes, but we also have like really a big focus on Guatemalan dishes.
Yeah, I really like how it's adapted to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's very, very Guatemalan. And you have dormitorio, mariposa. You have all sorts of these different sized bungalows. Can mm-hmm. we talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So we cater basically for individual guests, couples, and families. So individual guests are usually like the international travelers traveling alone. They usually go for the dorm, which is shared accommodation. Guatemalan guests are usually always going for private rooms. And here it depends if it's like it's just a couple going on a holiday. They're usually going for one of the smaller rooms, but very often our Guatemalan guests especially are big groups, big families.
Mm-hmm.
And so our big bungalows cater to up to 9 people, and they're very, very popular with Guatemalan guests. International guests, they prefer more the smaller ones that are for 2 to 3 people, because that's usually their travel size. But yeah, we cater for both, and we also cater for groups. So we love to have groups coming here, like organized travel groups from the US or from Europe that are coming here to have like retreats organized by different agencies, and really spending a few days here with them. We also have the pleasure to provide them the food during their stays. It's not just accommodation, but also catering. And yeah, we love doing that. We love organizing group travels together with the respective agencies from other countries, mm-hmm. including also like trips like going hiking up the Rostrumaia, for example, or organizing yoga classes and all these things.
Well, maybe we could talk a little bit about your hikes and tours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have hikes to Rostrumaia, which is the most popular one, but we also offer hikes to all the volcanoes in the area. Like next door is like San Pedro, but we also do like Santiago Atitlan, for example, and Toliman. And also a hike around the lake. They're very, very pretty and very popular as well. So the hikes are for people who want to be a bit more active. But we also do offer a lot of tours, which include, for example, cultural tours in San Juan, but also in Santiago, where you really learn a lot about the Totoxil culture,
mm-hmm.
where you visit. Different places like weaving cooperatives, art galleries. You learn about the history about the different wall paintings, the murals in the city.
It really gives you a great flavor of the town.
Yeah.
You also have bird watching tours.
Yeah, we do.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, and like what I love about this place here is actually you really wake up with the birds.
I do every morning. In fact, I'm looking at a hummingbird right now. There's hummingbirds flying around. I'm staring at a hummingbird right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're everywhere.
They are, yeah.
Stingless bees. I've tasted some of that delicious stingless bee honey.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a tour to the stingless bee place?
Yeah, we do. It's one of our local partners that we love to promote. So we bring people there where they can experience they can learn a lot about the stingless bees themselves, but also experience their products. And it's really interesting. Like I've been on that tour many, many times, and I still learn something new every time. It's really fascinating.
I have never tasted honey like that. The texture, the taste, everything is different from the honey that I'm used to.
Yeah.
And it's just it tastes so healthy.
Yeah, it is.
And you have horseback riding tours?
Yeah, we do. We also offer horseback riding for people who want to experience the nature but not really want to walk themselves. And of course, I mean, like I love being on a horse as well. It's just like special connection with a horse in nature. I love that. So we offer that. We always strive to work with a lot of local partners. So we work with local partners who offer the horse riding and like the places with the bees, for example. But we also work with a lot of local guides that actually take people on coffee tours, on hikes, on all different types of experiences.
Well, I went on the weaving workshop.
Yeah.
I think it was Elizabeth Hernandez.
Yeah.
Just over one road over, and it was fantastical because everything was natural. All the dyes were natural, and she had the actual fruit and vegetable in front of the actual color. So like something orange was a carrot, and then and then we got to use those looms.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing experience, and I think this town is famous for its weaving.
Yes, it is. It's very famous, especially for the natural coloring of the weaving. It's very famous for that. Yeah.
Also, you have a Mayan ceremony. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I love the Mayan calendar. It was like one of the things that was really drawing me so much into the culture here. When I came here, my first days was like, wow, this culture is just so alive. Like in other places, like in Tikal, you hear about the Mayans like centuries ago. Here, it's alive. It's completely alive. So it's part of the local culture to do ceremonies, to do Mayan ceremonies on certain specific events or for certain specific things that they wanna ask for. And so for me, it was always natural to include that as well as an option for foreigners who wanna experience that. Because it's just something so unique and something that I feel like can really give you some guidance as well in your life. It's like a horoscope, but I feel like it's a lot more accurate. So I don't really feel like I fit like the normal Western horoscope. But when I learned about my Maya Naval, it was like, oh, wow, yeah, that totally fits. And that totally makes sense. And that's exactly how I am. And I'm also trying to like follow it a bit loosely, the different days to, okay, what is the energy of that day? What is good to do on that day? And so if you ask for a ceremony, also like a reading of your Naval, your Mayan day sign, you will learn a lot about yourself and you will learn a lot about the Mayan culture. And I highly recommend doing that to really get that experience. And we also have like a special offering that you don't find so much in other places, which is a combination of the Mayan ceremony and the Temazcal, like, which is the traditional Mayan sauna. It's not like a Mexican Temazcal, it's not a sweat lodge, but it is traditional sauna in a way that people used to have in their houses before as well.
Is that kind of like what you have here with the wood?
Yeah. The one thing, that's like the sauna. And before that, like a few meters before that, we have a Mayan altar. So we do our ceremonies on the Mayan altar. The Mayan altar was there before. When we started to build here, basically, we discovered that Mayan altar. And so I was asking Mayan shamans if they can, what they think about it, if they can feel the energy. And they told me like, yeah, this is definitely an altar that people used to come to and do their offerings, because the Mayan altars are usually in nature, usually further away from the village.
Well, it's very natural here.
Yeah. So this Atala was in use. I don't know for how long before I bought the land here, and we discovered it, and we're using it now as well. We're using it for our ceremonies. We're using it as well, like other shamans from the village, for example, are coming from time to time just with their own guests or just with themselves and just use it. Because the thing with a minor altar is like you need to keep using it. You need to give it some energy. You need to give it some offerings. So it really demands that. It doesn't want to be like alone. It wants to have some energy. And I think it's very important that the place gets regular energy from ceremonies in that place, even if it's sometimes just lighting a little candle there. But it's important to nourish it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this place is also nourishing the whole environment here. It's really giving us the good energy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I love to be connected with the Mayan spirit, with the energy of the Mayan temples. And yeah, it's just something so special. And I think it's something that not every place has, but I also don't want people to see it commercially, because it's a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual place. We offer the ceremonies with proper shamans. They have the experience, they have the training, and we really want people to see that as a spiritual experience for them, and not something just made commercially, because it's not like this. It's really pure. And I feel like a lot of things that you see in San Juan, they are still very pure. Some things are very commercialized, but the essence is still there in a lot of those places. And that's why I still like to live in San Juan. It has changed a lot, but it's still a very good place to live, because this essence is still there. Like, mm-hmm. these people here love to keep their culture alive,
mm-hmm.
and they love to teach their culture as well to others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is so important,
mm-hmm.
to really keep the Mayan culture alive.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Mayans,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your dream team, your wonderful staff here.
Yes.
So you have the general manager.
Yes.
Elbia,
mm-hmm.
she's very local. I think she lives a couple of doors down.
Yes.
And Louisa across the street.
Yes.
And let's just talk about your incredible dream team, your Maya dream team here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a very good, very, very good team. Some of them have been in with me for many, many years. Like Elbia actually has been with me for 9 years now. So almost from the beginning.
And she started as a cook.
She started as a cook, and she was very soon promoted to manager, actually, because I was not here at that time, and because I had to work somewhere else to make money to support everything, and the other manager I had didn't do the job quite, so she was like stepping up really, really fast, and she's amazing. She's definitely, in my opinion, like one of the strongest women that I know, and she learned so much. She was like a very young girl. She was not used to deal with giving orders. She was not used to work with men, basically giving men orders. And in the beginning, it was really, really hard for her. It was very hard for me as well in the beginning, with this culture.
Mm-hmm.
But for her, it was, I think, maybe even more difficult, because she was really brought up in a society where women are less respected than men. And yeah, she totally stood her ground. She learned a lot. She developed herself into an amazing manager. I think she's absolutely wonderful. And yeah, I cannot praise her enough. she's definitely an amazing, amazing person, amazing manager, amazing friend. I'm super happy to have her. And yeah, we're also planning to actually convert my chick into a Sociedad Anonima with her as a partner. So she's soon going to be my business partner.
Excellente.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, also like the other people that are working here, I mean, like they're all amazing. They all have like their qualities. They all really developed, I think, their skills a
Could
lot.
Could we go through some of the duties of some of your staff here?
Yeah, like for example, Miguel, he has been with me for a couple of years now as well. And he went through different jobs actually, and so did a lot of the people actually that came here. Like starting in one position, but then because we were growing and growing, moving up. Mm-hmm. So he was starting as a gardener and then moving up to managing the housekeeping team and the garden, but yeah, with some more helpers. And then moving up and also including more like construction, because that's like more his passion right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, he basically made it from gardener to manager of the whole outside area. Mm-hmm. Also within a few years, so pretty fast as well. So we really value people that want to do something. We really do. And I know sometimes it's a bit difficult for them to just step up to the next role. But most of them, they step up and they find a way to do it. Just might be a bit difficult in the beginning, but they always do. And I think Miguel is a good example of that. He always has very, very positive attitudes, always creating a positive environment around him as well. He loves to joke and loves to create good vibes. So that's very, very important for the whole team as well, to have somebody like this on the team. And also another person that has been with us for quite a while is Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
So Brittany has been with us for 5 years, also quite long, and she started right from her school, basically. She was studying.
Amazing chef.
And yeah.
Amazing chef.
Yeah, so she was studying in the city, and then her mother asked us for a job for her, and like, okay, good, let's try. And yeah, she basically got here, her first job ever. And yeah, really developed into a good restaurant manager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And your housekeeping people?
Yeah, they're most of them actually new, apart from one guy. No, it's really like all of them are. Oh, actually, now I have like two people from San Pablo, and one is from San Pedro. Uh-huh. But the majority are from San Juan still. Mm-hmm. We have 12 people right now on the team, and like we've really been growing over the years. Like in the beginning, we just had like one person basically in charge of housekeeping and gardening, and like we didn't have much demand back then. It was manageable,
mm-hmm.
But fortunately, every year we were growing with more guests. And so we could also afford to have more and more stuff on the team. And Elder came here, and he was the only one basically in charge of like the housekeeping area. And he was working really, really good. And we just felt like, yeah, this guy totally is capable of being a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so we basically talked him into like, hey, you want to try a new role? We give you two assistants and we want you to manage the whole area. And so he's still like learning to be a good manager, but I think he's doing a great job so far. And it's like, he's like one of these people like, I'm not sure if I can do it, but he was such a good worker in that area. So we were like, we definitely see that he has the potential. We definitely want him to try that. And he was brave enough to take the chance and actually step into that role. And I know it was not easy for him in the beginning, managing his team, But yeah, he's getting better every day, and yeah, I love seeing that. I love to see how people really like step up their game, really
and they
getting
flourish.
better. Yeah, they do. I really think so. I mean, like, I love him starting, especially with people who are young, who don't have much experience, and just train them on the job and just see how they want to develop. Because I think that's the beauty about it. I could hire somebody who has a lot of experience, but that would basically like giving the salary of two people to just one. And so I rather have like very young people, not so much experience, but I can employ more people, and they can grow. And mm-hmm. with time, they will earn more money as well. And they learn for life. They don't only learn for here. Whatever they learn here, they can use anywhere else. And that's like one of our philosophies. Like, we really want you to learn for life. We really want you to learn something here that you can use afterwards. For example, like also like one very important member we have is like Milton, our receptionist. He's amazing. And like he learned so much here, it's amazing. And he also started his own business last year, so he started his own Airbnb now. He's my competitor, but that's amazing. I love people doing that. Also, like we had one of our people started to sell cakes on the weekend. Like, okay, good, no problem. Even if it's a competition for me, I always encourage them to do their own business, and I'm happy to help them mm-hmm. with their own business as well. Yeah, it's yeah.
Well, I guess we should give a couple of websites here. There's mychick.com, but the new one is bestecohotel.com. And what's the address here? What's the address here?
The address?
The name of the Esplanade.
Colonia La Esperanza.
Ah, sí.
Yeah, we're in Colonia La Esperanza.
Right at the very end, you just go right to the end and you hit the mountain, you're going to see Eco Hotel Maya Chick.
Yeah, exactly. The end of the road, yeah. After us, just forest. Yeah, no, I love to be at the end of the town. Like when I first came here, it was, there were hardly any people living here. I had a few neighbors, but most of them, they moved here in recent years. So this area got more populated in the last few years.
Another thing I love about this place are your animals. You have three dogs and two cats.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like going to a place that has animals.
Yeah.
You know, it's very soothing.
Yeah.
It kind of, there's a certain vibe to it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And so there's Candy, Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
What are the dogs' names?
Bubu, Nieve, and Luna.
Uh-huh. And they are lovely. Yeah. And of course, you do have neighbor dogs that drop in once in a while. I saw one of them rushing off with an avocado.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful neighborhood. I've been here several times, and I just love walking down the neighborhood and saying, mm-hmm. well, buenas tardes to people.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a very indigenous, very welcoming kind of
mm-hmm.
neighborhood.
Yes.
Now, so I think we're almost done here. I can't think of too many other things, but is there anything you'd like to maybe sum up with?
I just want to encourage people to really come to Guatemala and come to the more remote places. Guatemala has so much to offer. It's an incredible country. It's incredibly rich in culture and in nature. And I really want to invite everybody just come and experience this beautiful country. There are so many places in Guatemala that I love apart from this place here. And yeah, I definitely want to encourage everybody to just travel and like go to the backroads, go to the places that are not on the main tourist plan. And And yeah, just talk to people. Learn Spanish. It's the best place to learn Spanish. It is.
And a little Tzotzil and a little bit of the Maya phrases. Yeah, they love
definitely,
that.
Definitely. Yeah,
it's a beautiful language.
Yeah, it is. It is. For me, it's very hard to learn. Very hard. I tried it. I tried to learn Tzotzil. But after a few years, I just gave up. It's just like the sounds of it are just so too difficult for me to really pronounce. But yeah, I do understand some. I do understand, but it's hard for me to pronounce it, and that's how I gave up.
I find it very very beautiful and empowering, actually, that the indigenous people here are speaking their own language. They're embracing their own culture.
Yes.
That's something that that I find very, very hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is. It is, and it's. I'm very happy that it's. Really, there's really an effort to keep that alive. When I came here, a lot of people were speaking Tzotzil as the first language, and Spanish they learned in school. They didn't learn Spanish before that. But then, unfortunately, society changed, and there is unfortunately also like a lot of racism in the city against people who speak local languages. And so a lot of families, young families, they started to teach their kids Spanish as they grew up and not anymore Tzotzil, because they wanted to give their kids a better education. So those kids didn't learn Tzotzil at home anymore. And then when they were in school, the focus originally was just on Spanish. But then they realized, like, hey, if our kids are not talking Tzotzil anymore, we're going to lose our culture. And so they really started a lot of efforts to teach Tzotzil to kids.
Mm-hmm.
And now in all the primary schools, Tzotzil is one of the subjects that is taught. So even if they don't learn it in school, learn at home anymore, latest in school, in kindergarten, they start learning Tzotzil. And all the cultural events are very much focused on Tzotzil.
Mm-hmm.
So all the elections, like village queens and all that, it's always based on the culture, how well they present the culture and how well they speak Tzotzil and Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very empowering that there's really this commitment of society to really teach the local language. And now there are books to learn Tzotzil. There's a lot of material, not just for Tzotzil, but also for other Mayan languages. And I think that's a very good movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because it helps really to conserve their culture. And yeah, their culture is expressed through language. It is definitely one of the expressions. So, and if people stop using a language, they lose part of the culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's flourishing and thriving here. I just want to thank you again. Evelyn Leitner, owner, founder, and visionary of Eco Hotel Mayachik. I'll just give your websites again, mayachik.com and bestecohotel.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Phil. It was a pleasure.